Please pray with me. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. For you are our rock and redeemer. You are our guide. You are the road upon which we travel. Amen. We are told that the spiritual journey consists of a conscious decision to love God with all our heart and mind and soul and strength and our neighbor as much as we love ourselves. It's almost like a trinity of will. It's the path. This loving God, loving ourselves, loving neighbor. And we engage with the Spirit who helps us, and we engage our own will to follow that path. Every day, every moment, we are more or less aware of the decision to follow the path and more or less able to follow it. It's part of what being human is all about. I help lead the Wednesday night spiritual growth group here. It's a great help to me in this respect. There are 12 tasks, and we've just looked at the eighth one. And the eighth one is living in the present. The book that we're using as our guide instructs us in this way. Whenever you feel regret or anxiety, observe any connection with the past or future, which is where we usually live. Let go of it, and bring yourself into an awareness of something in the here and now. Say to yourself, this present moment is eternity. I am in the perfect place at the perfect time. And as we shared our experiences from the past week, each of us recognized the power of being able to truly be in that moment, in the present, and, of course, the attendant difficulty of doing so. This admonition, this teaching, came home for me last Friday while Diana, my wife, and I went hiking in Marin County. We try to get away on Fridays and hike in the hills, and I forgot to bring sunblock, so I got really kind of burned, but it was a great day. We went up towards Pine Mountain out of Fairfax, along the Fairfax-Belinas Road. We treasure our Sabbath walks, and it usually takes us a while to really arrive where we are. We, of course, take the week along with us for the ride in the car, and then it takes a while to shed that and leave it behind and truly be in the moment, watching and listening and thinking in a way that nurtures us, that gives us a sense of God's presence and peace. And there was a moment that I was aware of, that I chose to be present, and I was aware of that because I noticed the color of the ground on which we were walking. In that area of the world, the path, the fire road, could change from orange to bluish to white to just brown, depending on, of course, the chemical composition of the materials in the soil. I saw the shapes of the rocks. There are a number of vultures overhead, six of them at one point, and I thought, just keep walking. Don't stop. Don't look weak. I noticed the many wildflowers along the way. This is a time of year when all that greenery begins to be tinged with brown. It's just like, and all the wildflowers are still, it's just like, if we went in 2 more weeks, that would shift and change. And I became aware of the shift of seasons. And there was a hill in front of us over which the wind was coming through the tall grass, and it looked, as my wife remarked, as if someone was smoothing velvet. You know that the change of texture, the grasses are standing and then they come down and they go back up and they in waves. And many bees buzzing in the flowers as we stopped and just listened to the wind and to the animals and to our own heartbeats. And being in the present helped me not just escape, but to be fed. And I think as this lesson 8 tried to teach us, we can be fed, we can be nurtured, and in a sense we do experience the touch of eternity in the moment, as time stops. It's not important. Where we've come from is back there. Where we're going is still there, but we have a plan, but we are not anxious about it. Another story from my life. I've been taking improvisational theater lessons over in Oakland for almost 2 years. A terrifying and wonderful experience. And it occurred to me while on that same walk with my wife that improv theater is an exercise in being totally in the present moment. To let go of, oh my gosh, I have to say something to keep the scene going, and I have to be clever. And what will the people watching me think? And for me, that's a huge thing to let go of. But the more fully I'm able, as our teacher keeps trying to teach us, don't worry about the storyline that you're constructing. Look at the other person, at the other persons. Be aware of the relationships, the postures, the expressions. Look almost, these are my words, in back of what they're thinking. There's plenty of material to engage with there. And as you do that, in an authentic way, magic happens. You don't have to worry about where the story's going. It just happens. It flows. Whether it's funny or sad, it doesn't matter. Now, our teacher teaches us to be, quote unquote, bigger, bolder, and stupider, as a way for us to let go of all that other stuff and just be there. I like that. Bigger, bolder, and stupider. A lot of us need training in that. I found that the more I lost myself in the web of relationships that developed and almost morphed throughout any given scene, the more fun it was, and the more depth and complexity and aliveness there was. And then one more thing. We are, as I reminded myself on that walk, we are connected with nature as well as the whole human race. Being here is a reminder of that. Going to work, school, play is a reminder that we are connected to everything. And I read not long ago that our love of technology, all of you have cell phones somewhere? Computers? Our love and need of technology has unintended consequences that harm other people. This isn't a feel guilty Americans kind of speech. It's just one of those things many of us are not aware of. The people of the Congo are going through one of the worst periods of warfare and civil strife since World War II. And we don't even know about it. Because the materials tin, tantalum, and tungsten are used in many ways in our technology. And gold. So it's the three T's and gold. And armed groups have set themselves up fighting for toll points and areas to control and power over this. And civilians, especially, are suffering very deeply. Well, we go merrily on using our cell phones and our computers and so on, looking for the next best thing. Now, there's good news in that there's a growing movement to pressure companies, et cetera, to be aware of where their supplies come that we enjoy in the form of these finished products, and to try to have conflict-free materials. You've heard of conflict-free diamonds in the past. This is another step. That there's a recognition that if one of us is enjoying ourselves and the other is suffering, something's wrong there. We need to pay attention to that. And in the midst of our prosperity and our want and need for more and more complex things, the poor of the earth are the ones who suffer for it. You can go online and just look this up. It's there in startling, brutal detail. And it's a shock to the system. It's a reminder to us that the world is deeply connected, whether for good or for evil. And our corporations and us as individuals are enmeshed in this. And how do we find our way forward? How do we seek justice and compassion within this incredible, complex web of relationships in this world? I'm telling you these things because it's the inner and outer connections, the connection with God, with our inner selves, with our neighbor, far and nearby, that have the great potential for good and for evil. And I see this in the two texts for today. The one about the Ethiopian and Philip is a story about both kinds of connections, inner and outer. Philip listened to the inner promptings of the Spirit and traveled south along the wilderness road towards Gaza without knowing why he was going there. He just went. The Ethiopian finance minister had made this very long trip out of a ancient Jewish community in Ethiopia, north to Jerusalem to worship. If he truly was a castrated male, he could not get into the temple. According to Deuteronomy 23:1, he was unclean. He went anyway. Perhaps that word does not mean that. It means simply a minister or an attendant on the court, something like that. But if it does mean what I think it means, he went to worship from afar. And he went anyway, hundreds of miles. On his way back with his retinue, he's reading aloud, which was the custom of the day, out of the book of the prophet Isaiah, chapter 53. That's why Philip understands what he's doing. He hears him reading. Philip, again by the promptings of the Spirit, runs up to him and says, "Do you know what you're reading?" And he says, "I need help." So they talk together, and out of that marvelous conjunction of different races and backgrounds and maybe languages, there must be a trade language that they spoke together, came this change in the Ethiopian person's life, and he wanted to be baptized. And he was. He joined the wider communion of believers in the Lord. And I think that Philip was so transported by joy, they almost lost touch with where he was. And when he next came to himself, he was in a different place, Azotus. He was just so filled with joy over what God had done, what the Spirit had guided him to do, and the results of that, that he didn't care where he was. There's a story of Elijah running. You remember that? From Mount Carmel. And he ran miles until he finally came to himself. I think it's the same kind of thing here. This is a sign to the early church, this passage, that all the boundaries between people of whatever kind had come down through the Lord. That the following of the Spirit, the meeting people where they were, the making of connections, both inner and outer, was what was important. The making of peace. So I'm wondering if we, here in 21st century America, what might be possible in terms of fellowship, connections, justice, compassion, if we follow the Spirit, if we allow ourselves to be present in the moment, if we truly listen and then act. In Christian theology in general, faith and action are essential. In Swedenborgian theology, I understand they are also connected. You can't tear them apart. The book of James and the New Testament is all about that. You have faith? Great, show me. If you have no works to back or actions or whatever word you want to use, uses, if you have nothing to back up what you say you believe, then it's worth nothing. But show me actions, and I'll believe your faith. This is a huge challenge to the most powerful nation in the world. Right here. We who dare to call ourselves a Christian nation. Jesus said, "I am the vine, you are the branches." Again, that inner connection. I am the rootstock. You are the branches that come out of me, that are fed like sap coming through a tree or a vine, through the branches of the vine to produce grapes, through the branches of a tree to produce fruit. If you take yourself away from me, you will die. You will lose your spiritual vitality. You'll be good for nothing better than to be burned on a waste pile. John's gospel was written in the late first century, at a time when Jews and Jewish Christians had split. Jews who become Christians as believers in Jesus as the Messiah had been thrown out of the synagogues and had found their own place. Meanwhile, this growing church, which had been joined by Gentiles, non-Jews, was beginning to splinter. Christians do that. Presbyterians do it. I'm sure Swedenborgians have done it too. We all do it. And this may have been a plea for people to stay with their true church and not to go off somewhere and lose touch with the rootstock, with the Christ. Stay connected. Stay fed. Don't take yourself away. And of course, it is a wonderful expression, this text is, of this mystical connection between the believer and God. The sense of giving and taking, the sense of being in communion with, the sense if separation happens, it's painful. We lose our way. We lose our juice, our sap, our vitality, our ability to be of use to God. We are fed by the rootstock, not apart from it. Back to my improv group. We have a certain practice that we do as part of our warm-up. We mill around on the stage area, and we, as a way of connecting interiorly as well as with the other, walk around and either hug each other or touch somehow and say, "I've got your back. You're a genius. You're the best improviser I've ever met." Things like that. And we do it for a while until we really start to believe it. "You're the best." And we hear that. "Me? I know you are, but me? I've got your back. I support you. You support me." Part of the miracle of improv is we assume each other as a genius. And we support one another in that. We don't cut ourselves off. It's not about us individually. It's about us as a group. Can you imagine what churches would become if we did that kind of thing? I invite you, you don't have to get up, just reach over to the next person and say, "I've got your back." Right now, come on. Next time we do this, I'll have you all stand up and, you know. Did that feel good? Yeah, a little strange. Okay. Yeah, I haven't done that before. But can you imagine if that were our opening words to each other? "I've got your back. We're in this together. We are connected. I believe in you. You believe in me. I believe in your giftedness. You believe in mine. I'll support you. It's not about me, it's about us." You know, this day, Mother's Day, started by Julia Ward Howe in the 1870s. Her proclamation had to do with justice, not just giving gifts to moms. It had to do with the cause of nonviolent resolution of conflict and international solidarity among all women, I'm quoting. This is just after the Franco-Prussian War, a very bloody conflict. And some people had enough, including her, and she's tried to start an international movement of women dedicated to stopping violence, to making peace. This inner-outer connection. And we celebrate Mother's Day by sending cards to each other. It got watered down by none other than President Wilson. He took away all the other concerns and he made it about home and hearth. And that's important. That's important. I'm going to be with my wife this afternoon and we're going to have Mother's Day. But it started up much, much bigger than that. Go online. Look it up. It's amazing if you've never heard these words. I won't read the declaration. It's a full page. It's a sense of we are all connected across the world. And if we hurt each other, well, we all bleed. We can put a stop to it. So I think each one of us is on, maybe, a wilderness road. You know, Jerusalem is the center. And Philip went from the center of his faith, the center, the navel of the world. As, you know, the three faiths are centered there. And he left for Gaza, which is still there, right? And he went on a wilderness road, maybe a dangerous one. Maybe there are bandits. Maybe it was just hot and dry and dusty and like a desert. But that's where he went. He went out from the center to the edge because he was told to do that. Doing what? He didn't know. But I think as we go along our wilderness paths, we can, in obedience to the movement of the Spirit, we can do so trusting that something is happening that's larger than we are. It's about us, not about me. And I am being used in the us. There may be opportunities to break through barriers. There may be the possibility of unexpected joy for others and ourselves. Perhaps a new world can begin to be constructed through these barriers that we put between people, between nationalities, between races, between gender preferences or identities, between all the things, between rich and poor, homeless and those with homes, between mothers and those who are not mothers. All these barriers that are in Christ permeable. Because it's about us. It's about building a new world of peace. There's a poem that I shared with the Wednesday night group last week because it speaks about being in the present moment and finding life there. And I think I've read it to this congregation already, but I'll read it again. It's called Resolve by Vassar Miller. I'll read it twice. I learned from Christine Rogers to read poems twice. I must go back to the small place, to the swept place, to the still place, to the silence under the drip of the dew, under the beat of the bird's pulse, under the whir of the gnat's wing, to the silence under the absence of noise. There bathe my hands and heart in the hush. There rinse my ears and my eyes. There know thy voice and thy face. Until when, O my God, do I knock with motionless knuckles on the crystal door of the air hung on the hinge of the wind? I must go back to the small place, to the swept place, to the still place, to the silence under the drip of the dew, under the beat of the bird's pulse, under the whir of the gnat's wing, to the silence under the absence of noise. There bathe my hands and heart in the hush. There rinse my ears and my eyes. There know thy voice and thy face. Until when, O my God, do I knock with motionless knuckles on the crystal door of the air hung on the hinge of the wind? There is eternity. There is the center. And why do we do this? Frederick Buechner is a wonderful writer. He writes this. Your life and my life flow into each other as wave flows into wave. And unless there is peace and joy and freedom for you, there can be no real peace or joy or freedom for me. To see reality, not as we expect it, but as it is to see that unless we live for each other and in and through each other, we do not really live very satisfactorily. That there can really be life only where there really is, in just this sense, love. May it be so.